The Mornings Institute.
Well, we always want your contributions on this one, of course. Saul Eastlake joins us. He's an independent economist and Vice Chancellor Fellow at the University of Tasmania. And you know the name very well because he's an ex-chief economist of the ANZ Bank, ex-chief economist of the Bank of America, Merrill Lynch, and, well, their branch in Australia at least. And so we welcome him to the program. G'day, Saul. Thanks for joining us for the Old Institute.
Good morning, Wendy. Thanks for having me.
It's our very own think tank. We like to tackle the big questions here. So how do we get the companies to cough up the right amount of tax? This is something that's really vexing us, isn't it? Very much so. And we saw all the big honchos from the Business Council of Australia, the head honchos, trekking off to Canberra yesterday to ask for tax cuts. So all very interesting, topic indeed. So tell us about the Google tax that's just been passed into law.
Oh, this is officially known as a diverted profits tax, and it's similar to one that was introduced a couple of years ago in the UK, which is an attempt to give, in our case, the Australian Tax Office, the right to impose tax on the revenue of corporations that are believed to be engaged in shifting part or more of their profits to low tax jurisdictions rather than paying what's deemed to be an appropriate amount of tax on the profits they make in Australia. So it's targeted primarily at multinational corporations, and it gives the tax office much greater authority to determine how much a company is actually earning in profits than is the case with the vast majority of corporations operating in and owned in Australia.
And how does Australia's company tax rate compare with other countries?
Well, as the government has repeatedly been saying, Australia's statutory tax rate of 30% is higher than most other OECD economies, except for, you know, not unimportantly, Japan and the United States. Australia actually collects a higher proportion of its GDP in company tax than any other Western economy except Norway
That's good on us.
Yeah, indeed. That's partly because we have a relatively high tax rate, partly because corporate profits are a bigger share of our economy than they are in most other Western economies. But in 2014, which is the last year for which the OECD's published data, Australia collected 4.7% of GDP in company tax. The only country higher than us was Norway with 6.6%, and of course that reflects their oil company tax collections in particular. The average for the OECD, a club of Western industrial nations, was 2.8%. Looked in a slightly different way, we collect more of the tax revenue we collect from all sources, from companies, than most other Western economies. We collected just under 17% of all the tax we collect in Australia from company tax. The average for all Western nations was about 8.8%.
Okay.
So, and part of the reason for that, Wendy, is that our unique system of dividend imputation, whereby shareholders can claim back some of the tax that's been paid, or the tax that's been paid by the companies in which they own shares, gives Australian-owned companies or companies with a lot of Australian shareholders a powerful motive to pay something pretty close to the statutory company tax rate. That's why, for example, the banks, the big four banks, who in 2014-15 made $42 billion in profits, paid about $11 billion in company tax, which, when you allow for the fact that some of the bank's profits will have been made overseas in countries like New Zealand and will have paid tax there on them, that's pretty close to the statutory tax rate. So the problem with corporate tax avoidance tends to arise more with multinational companies operating in Australia who don't have Australian shareholders and thus don't face the same incentive from dividend imputation to pay fully franked credits to fully franked dividends to their shareholders. The second problem can arise with unlisted private companies controlled by either an individual or family groups who likewise may not face the same incentive to pay something close to the statutory tax rate because they're not interested in dividends.
Okay. Now, I just have a text here, Saul, and I guess this is probably a pretty common perception, and I want you to tell me whether it's true. How come Qantas was at Parliament asking for the company tax cut? Didn't they pay no tax last year anyway? I guess that's what most Australians are walking around thinking, a good many of us are anyway, that a lot of companies are paying no tax at all. What's the truth of that?
I'm not sure of individual company circumstances, but I think in the case of Qantas, there was a recent year in which they reported a very large loss. And as a result of that, they either wouldn't have paid tax in that year, or because the company tax system allows companies to carry forward losses against future profits, they may have...
But what I mean to say is that there is this perception in the Australian public mind that most of our companies, you know, get away with murder. They're not paying their fair share. From the figures that you've just given me anyway, it sounds like that they... It sounds like as if they mostly are, and we're talking about the big corporations that don't. But how does this perception, how did it come to be such a common one that companies are dodging tax all over the place, especially a one like Qantas, which is a local company?
Well, partly because those occasions when companies appear not to be paying 30% of the profit they report in that year, and that does happen for a variety of perfectly legitimate reasons, that's the sort of thing that attracts public attention. And I suppose just as, to use the old phrase, one bad apple can make the whole bunch smell or look bad, those occasions tend to colour people's view of what everyone's doing, whereas I guess if you have 90 companies, all of which are paying 30% tax on the profits they make in that year, that's probably not headline news, so people don't get to hear about it. But the statistical facts are, as I said before, that Australia collects a bigger proportion of our national income and a bigger proportion of the total tax we collect from all sources in company tax than almost every other rich country in the world.
Well, that is a very, very interesting statistic there, Saul. What I would like to do, if you're able to, would be to call for some people to join in this conversation, and we'll take it up after the news, because I guess the next part of this, of course, is to talk about the Google tax and how we can make those international companies companies pay up. And, of course, Chevron is in the spotlight at the moment, which is a very interesting case, and I'll get you to expand on that one as well. So if you would like to join in this conversation with Saul and my good self, Saul Eastlake, of course, is an independent economist and Vice Chancellor Fellow at the Uni of Tasmania, and has a lot to say about this subject and what he doesn't know about it. It's not worth knowing, I don't think. A few of your suggestions would be very welcome. For instance, I have a text here saying introduce a turnover tax that's hard to avoid, easy to administer. Someone else is saying treat companies like PAYE taxpayers. So don't go away. Give me a call.
Call Wendy now on 1300 222 702.
And you can join the conversation with Saul and my good self after the news, which is coming up in just a moment.
Water you've ever drunk.
Breakfast with Robbie Buck.
I have a bubbler I put on the front of my garage at the footpath, and hundreds of runners and walkers every week use that water and think it's the best water they've had in a long time.
You're a very generous man, James.
I feel I'm making a contribution towards restricting the use of plastic water bottles.
Yeah, that's right. They know that good old James's place has got some fresh water there. When we get there, we'll have a long drink.
ABC Radio Sydney.
It's when they start bringing the horses you've got to worry.
Lots of calls coming after the news for Mr. Eastlake and myself on in the Mornings Institute, which is now in session, by the way, of course.
The Mornings Institute.
And we will be reconvening that after the news. And Tony Matthews is here with us now. Hi, Tony. What's happening?
Good morning, Wendy. Assistant Commissioner Mick Fuller is expected to be named as the next New South Wales Police Commissioner. It's understood the state government is voting on his appointment at a cabinet meeting, and a formal announcement will be made shortly. Mr. Fuller joined the police force 30 years ago at the age of 19 and rose through the ranks to become an Assistant Commissioner in 2010. The Victorian Council of Social Services says the federal government's intervention on the minimum wage review is outrageous. In a submission to the Fair Work Commission's annual wage review, the government says an increase wouldn't help low-paid Australians or raise living standards. The council says many low-paid workers are struggling to make ends meet. And US President Donald Trump's daughter, Ivanka, is officially joining her father's administration as an unpaid employee. A White House official says her title will be Assistant to the President. More ABC News, Wendy, at 11 o'clock.
Oh, well, that's finally given Ivanka a name. Okay. Well, that's interesting. She's been sitting in on all kinds of high-level meetings. I guess that just gives her carte blanche to do everything in the White House, from sit there next to Angela Merkel to...
What is assistant to the president?
What does it mean?
I don't know. I'm assistant to Wendy Harmer. What does that mean?
No, well, I think assistant to the president is dead. Put down that phone and stop tweeting. How about that? Yeah. That'd be a good idea.
And you're not playing golf this weekend.
There may be that.
You're working on policy.
I wish you might be going caddy. You never know. All right. Well, thanks very much for that, Tony. Hey, you're a bit out of breath. You had to run up the stairs. Don't tell me the lift's broken.
All the printers broke down.
All the printers broke down. Oh, what? Okay, gotcha. All right. Thanks very much, Tony. Yes, we're coming up in just one moment. We are going to jump back into our Mornings Institute. We're just getting started. The topic is, how do we get companies to pay their fair share of tax?
The great deal maker, the first big deal he doesn't manage to make.
Drive with Richard Glover.
What does that do to Trump's reputation as a great deal maker?
It shows that whatever deal making ability he had doesn't translate into politics.
Mike Pence on getting rid of Obamacare.
As the president said today, don't worry, America. He just tweeted this morning. We'll be ready to get the job done.
ABC Radio Sydney.
It is funny, isn't it? The vice president quoting the president via his tweet.
And yes, we are in session, as I mentioned, the old Mornings Institute.
The Mornings Institute.
And Saul Eastlake is with us, very, very fascinating thus far. Thank you, Saul. I've got a couple of calls here, Saul. You ready to go?
Absolutely.
Okay, here we go. Stephen from Wollongong. What are your thoughts here, Steve?
Yeah, look, hi, everybody. Look, just before I can sort of get an idea, can you please explain, there's been a lot of talk in regards to the gas and royalties. Now, in regards to company tax, are these two separate things or are they the same? And if they are two different things, then is it possible to be tougher in regards to recouping more royalties from companies who sell our products, who sell our resources offshore?
Stephen, yes, they are two separate things. The petroleum resource rent tax was introduced by the Hawke government in the late 1980s, and it was meant to apply a tax on profits earned from the exploitation of offshore oil and gas, that is principally Bass Strait and the North West Shelf, over and above a normal rate of return on the funds invested. And then after that, companies would be subject to company tax as well. So companies affected by it were supposed to be paying both taxes. What has transpired thus far is that it's really only Esso and BHP who pay significant amounts of this petroleum resource rent tax. And that's in part because, as I understand it, the depreciation provisions, the allowances which the PRRT made when it was established for the cost of investment in establishing, in particular, the big big LNG fields off the North West Shelf have been so generous that the companies which have established these fields will not be paying any PRRT for a very long period of time. And I think what needs to happen, and what is being investigated, the International Tax Justice Network has done a lot of work bringing this to light, and the government has responded to that by committing to undertake an investigation as to what's actually happening here. But the problem appears to be that the allowances made in the PRRT legislation when it was first written are much too generous to companies in allowing them to offset their investments against the royalties and the resource rent tax that they would otherwise pay.
Yep. So is it possible? So it is a tax. So is it possible now that we can close that gate and tighten things up in regards to that so we can start to recoup, even though those companies you've just outlined have you know, won't be paying a lot of that tax for a long, long time, but and that horse has bolted. But can we close a stable gate and rein in, you know, for the near term or the near future in regards to any other, you know, exploratory, you know, licenses that may be granted and to recoup some, you know, the money there?
My answer to you, Stephen, would be yes, I certainly hope so, and we will have to wait and see whether the investigation the government's undertaking will produce that sort of result. I mean, I've read recently that the Japanese government is collecting more in the sales tax it imposes on Australian LNG when it's landed and sold in Japan than the Australian government collects from the people who produce it, which sounds ridiculous.
Yeah. Well, there's something, you know, I mean, just looking at that, there's something not quite right there, obviously. So, thank you very much, anybody. That's great.
Good-o. Thank you very much, Stephen. Let's talk to John from Parramatta. What's your thought here, John?
Oh, g'day, Wendy and Sol. Well, my thought is about the calculation of what ends up being taxable income, because it's all very well to say our companies pay their taxable income, etc., but the reality is companies buy yachts, they buy vehicles, they pay for fuel, they get works of art, etc., etc. They have write-offs, which conveniently massively reduces their taxable income. And in reality, these are perks, if you like, for the lucky recipients, and they reduce the taxable income massively, and it looks then like the companies pay their appropriate tax on their taxable income.
Sure,
but quite frankly, to use a technical term, that's bull, you know what.
Okay, good on you. Thank you for that. John, what's your thought there, Saul?
I don't know the extent to which that's actually true. I mean, I don't doubt that it happens as John describes, but for example, the bank that I worked for did not own a boat, did not own a plane, and while it certainly spent up on senior executive salaries and the like and offices, and they are under the law, you know, deductible expenses, although of course the people who earn the high executive salaries pay personal income tax on those at a higher rate than the bank or any other company deducts them from their taxable income. So there's still a net return to the government from companies which pay tax-deductible high executive salaries. So, as I say, I'm not sure of the extent to which this is making a big inroad into the amount of tax that the government collects.
All right. Let's talk to Ian as well. We've got time for maybe a couple more questions for you, Saul, and then we'll round it up by having a look at say at those multinationals who are probably skiving off. Ian, what's your thought here, Ian?
Hi, Wendy. How are you?
Good.
Wendy, multinationals have set up regional pricing areas. Now, in what that means, Australia gets charged a lot more than what other areas do for their products. What we should do is set up a price differential tax, in which encourages them to sell to Australia at a reasonable price, as compared to the rest of the world, instead of trying to rip us off over here.
Okay. Well, good-o. Well, thank you for that one, Ian. We might just take that one as a comment there, I think, Saul. I have a question for you here, though. This is an interesting one. If we got rid of cash in, this is a text, if we got rid of cash in the economy, 20% would probably be the maximum tax rate. I'm in the building industry and it is riddled with this white-collar crime. What comment has Saul got on this issue?
There's an element of truth in that, to be sure, that there is, despite the introduction of the GST, which was meant to bring more of a black economy into the tax net, there's still quite a lot of cash transactions going on that evade GST and probably personal and corporate income tax as well. That said, I think that's a much smaller problem in aggregate than the problem which arises not so much from what your previous questioner said about multinational companies, tech companies in particular, charging Australians higher prices for products than they would pay for the same thing in, for example, the US, but rather in structuring their sales so that, for example, when you buy a phone or you download something from the internet and you're charged a price by an Australian subsidiary of a multinational, that multinational says that a huge component of the price is a royalty that is paid to some other subsidiary of the big company that's domiciled in Ireland or the Netherlands Antilles or something like that. That's much more important a source of tax evasion by international companies operating in Australia than is people doing things for cash in the building trade or the retail trade or in various other parts of business, which, as I say, goes on. I don't deny that at all. But in aggregate terms, I don't think it's as big a problem as the one that we're about to talk about.
Yes, well, I'm looking here at an article. It is admittedly from 2015, and the tax office boss, Chris Jordan, was chasing a whole lot of very big companies to pay up their fair share of tax. How's he going in that endeavour?
Well, we don't have any hard figures on this as yet, but we may start to see some when results for 2017-18, the financial year that's about to start, comes, because beginning on 1 July 2017, this diverted profits tax, or Google tax as it's commonly known, is going to come in. As I said before, that allows the tax commissioner to impose a tax of 40% on income which he judges has been diverted to offshore or other locations to obtain a tax benefit by companies which have global sales of more than $1 billion. That, as I say, is one of the, along with the similar measure that the UK introduced a couple of years ago, is one of the strongest measures in the world. It remains to be seen how effective it will be, because as I think we'll say a bit more in a moment, it's very hard for countries acting on their own to make a big difference here, but at least the tax office is trying, and they are being supported in this regard by both the government and the opposition passing this legislation in Parliament.
Okay, well, I'm afraid we're going to have to leave it there, actually, Saul, because we have a live band that we've got to get to here in the studio. But that was a very good hit out for first up, so we might get you back again to delve more into that particular topic of multinationals and tax. But as you say, the first results will be known quite soon. Thanks very much for joining us today.